board meeting.
Call the roll, please.
Governor Hochman?
Yes.
Secretary Hannig? Chair Wolf?
Here.
Director Banks? Director Cannon?
Here.
Director Morris?
Here.
Director Prado?
Here.
Director Wolf?
Here.
Director Saldana?
Here.
Director Towns?
Here.
Director Wisner?
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you.
A quorum is physically present. In addition, Director Wisner would like to attend the meeting by phone. He is prevented from physically attending because of a personal illness, which is one of the approved reasons for such participation.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? We did fail to take a roll call for the audit committee, so you observed who was here.
Yes.
We'll include that within the minutes. I apologize. My mistake. I believe we had no request for public comment, but I would ask if there's anybody here who wants to make public comment. I want to apologize to Mr. Friedlander, who came thinking we were going to do a presentation, and I got your letter. We're in the process of responding. We'll see you, I hope, when we do the presentation on Route 53, and we'll talk about that in just a second. So there's no one else who would like to do public comment? Okay. Then may I hear a motion to approve the minutes from the March 25th meeting?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, thank you very much. I just have a quick report first, and most important, I want to welcome Christy LaFleur, who has joined us. This is her first meeting, and she's already been on the job 2 weeks. It's just a pleasure. While Mike was and is still a wonderful part of the Tollway family, we're very happy to have Christy here, and she will introduce her new chief of staff in just a minute. I also want to mention that there is going to be a reception formally welcoming Christy right after the board meeting, so we'll adjourn to the lobby, which is where, is that where it's going to be? Yeah, where we will do that. So thank you very much, Christy, for joining us. We're delighted. And then I just have a couple of other things. I wanted to remind people, although I know everybody knows this, but somehow it's gotten garbled publicly, about the process we're going through as a board. We're looking at those projects which exist and are possible projects and priorities for the tollway to fund. We are reviewing those one by one. We were going to do Route 53 today. I think because it's a complicated project, Christy wants to be up to speed on it, and I think it's appropriate that we do that. We postpone that until next month at our next meeting. We will continue to present on those projects to look at them. As you all know, the next step in the process is to review those and prioritize them, and then to talk about the financing of those projects. There is no toll increase on the table now before this board. There's been some confusion about that. That's not something that's under consideration. And I also wanted to clarify one other thing that Paul presented at a meeting earlier this week about the Jane Addams, which is that, as you all know, the money for the Jane Addams resurfacing is actually in the congestion relief program. It's the east side of the Jane Addams. We've got that whole program. There's not a pending issue about that unless we choose one of the other versions of the Jane Addams, which we had considered, I believe, at the February meeting. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody is clear in that, because I think some of the reports have been unclear about that. Third, I just want to mention that we did meet with one of the bonding agencies earlier this week, and Mike and Bill and others did a great presentation on that. Addition to misinformation that's out there, I want to make sure everybody understands the tollway is on budget. We don't have a problem, and we actually have projected the revenues to pay our debt service over the period of the bonds that we've got outstanding. So again, just to clarify that. I want to talk quickly. We did have an Earth Day Summit on the 22nd, and appreciate the directors who were able to attend. Governor Kane talked to the summit. We had some, I think, extremely good conversation. I would say that Director Morris represented us very well in terms of his consistent articulation of interesting and important issues. And we did have the chairs of all of the other agencies there. Secretary Hannick was there for some period of time and then had to leave. We have a copy in your material of the accord that was signed by all of the directors, and that's also posted on our website, which has a set of principles that the tollway has signed on to, and then an agreement that we're going to try to work together with the other agencies moving forward to better coordinate the transportation decisions within this region, and to think about how to prioritize, as well as thinking about how to do that in a sustainable and green way. The governor again emphasized the importance of that, and because it was Earth Day, that turned out to be a perfect synergy. I believe that Director Wisner does not have a report on the OASIS working group, but Director Morris, do you want to say anything about the customer service working group?
Not really an update. We are going to meet probably in the middle of this coming month to follow up on the projects we've been looking at. Our main concern initially has been the overall electronic tolling contract, and as soon as the new executive director gets a chance to get up to speed, then we're hoping to have her available sometime in the middle of the month so we can decide what our next step is on that. So we're kind of on hold. There have been some new signs placed about how you can pay your tolls if you miss them. All of that stuff is good, and it sounds like very minor stuff, but the more we can continue to do this public relation education, the better off we are. We're getting good feedback on the length of the new tollway or the upgraded tollway that runs from down here to the Wisconsin line up when you ride them. It moves quickly. People are very satisfied with the construction. And so, you know, at least from that end of the state, there seems to be satisfaction with what's happening. There's some minor issues that we will deal with in terms of sound and that. But for the most part, it's been really a positive experience, at least from my end of the state. So that's good news. And I'd like to just, separate from that, getting all of the people together from various mass transit and other agencies has been something that has not been successful for over 20-some years. And I don't know about the people on the board, but those who were there recognize that happened because of one person, and she's sitting in this room, Paula Wolf, who pushed that forward. And this is a major breakthrough in long-term planning for the entire region. And I just appreciate what Paula did on that, and hope that it can follow with a quarterly meeting with the various chairs so that we eliminate duplication and begin to see this as one regional system rather than a bunch of independent agencies. So Paula, just from my end and from the board members, thank you very much for pulling that together.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And great. We are looking for recommendations and suggestions about how we move forward, and Christy and I will be talking about, because it isn't only the chairs, it's also the executive directors that we need to figure out how to coordinate better. But thank you for your report, and thank you for that compliment. There was a very good article, I thought, in the Sunday New York Times last week in the Chicago Supplement side talking about that. So we might want to circulate that. I think it was actually in the clips. Thank you. And as to signage, I was delighted this morning to see that we blamed IDOT for the congestion of so I was driving along the tollway.
All is fair.
We're going to work together, but we're going to
get
and then finally, just as to board management, and Christy's going to talk a little bit about her next steps in terms of transition, but she will be talking, or has talked to all of the board members. One of the things we want to think about together is how we structure the board, how we structure the committees, how we do our work. So we're going to be looking to her to help us figure out how to do that. Not that I have any problems with what we're doing, but we can always improve them. So she will be talking to you if any suggestions about that. Please let her know. Thank you. I'll turn it over to Christy.
Great. Well, thank you very much. This is my first board meeting. As many of you know, I started on the 19th, so last Monday, and I've already had occasion to give Senate testimony 3 days into my new job, which was an interesting experience, but we worked through it, which was great. For those of you who weren't here earlier, I wanted to take another opportunity to introduce my new chief of staff, Doug Kusha. He just started this week. This Monday has been his first day here. Doug comes to us, he was the chief operating officer at CMS, but has a variety of public and private sector experience I think will serve us very well, and I'm thrilled to have him here to help as we move forward in running the agency. Again, as many of you may already be aware, and I think are aware, I started my week off last week with the announcement of creating this the tollway transition team, which I know Chair Wolf had an opportunity to discuss that with you, and I appreciate all of you who had some thoughts on that and recommendations for us on that transition team. I think it's an opportunity for us, really, that group, to bring together leaders from the business community, from the transportation community, really all walks of life, to help us craft a strategic vision for the agency going forward. I think that it's a great opportunity to get some outside eyes and voices involved in our process, and I know that we've been doing that, and the board has been seeking that over the last, certainly over the last month. But I think that this will be a really good opportunity for us to refocus on our customers, which of course is important, the environment, and of course the communities that we serve. We'll be working with this team to create a transition report, which we will hope to have in early fall to frame the direction and to help us or advise us on framing the direction of the agency going forward and in the years to come. The transition team will evaluate opportunities for the tollway to advance our mission and contribute most effectively to regional economic growth, which of course I think we can all agree is very important right now, foster environmental responsibility in the roadway and agency operations, increase coordination with regional transportation and planning agencies, take additional steps on transparency and accountability, and of course, as always, continue to focus on our customer and customer service as our number one priority. I say this fully understanding that the current leadership staff at the tollway has taken steps in many of these directions, and so I don't want to dismiss the good work that's been done so far, but rather maybe there are opportunities, as we all know, there are opportunities to improve, and this I think can hopefully guide us and give us some good ideas in that direction. We plan to convene the first meeting of this group sometime in May, and we'll certainly make sure that all the board members are invited to attend that, and that meeting will be open to the public, that first full meeting of the transition team. In concert with the transition team efforts, I've already begun the process of launching a top-to-bottom review of tollway programs, finances, and of course the organizational structure and contracts, as we've heard today. I am currently developing the scope of a transition management review and will come back to you next month to ask for your support in launching that effort specifically. As part of that review, I think we can expect that all major contracts certainly would be examined, but we would also, I think, try to get a handle on the timing to the extent we think that a new RFP is appropriate, and I take your point, Director Morris, certainly to heart that we don't want to overburden our own operations and administration, but to the extent we think there's an opportunity for a new RFP or a new RFP is appropriate, we want to fully understand the timeline for issuing those RFPs and what we can expect, any implementation timelines, et cetera, if we make those changes. We're going to be hearing in a little while on some procurement reform that has taken place, and you know, as that's worked out in the coming months, it will also illuminate our own timing issues. I've made the point, but I wanted to reiterate it, that as you've heard in several of the contract briefings already today and vendor briefings today, we really are taking an opportunity to, if there will be extensions or additional time on contracts, doing that with an eye to what our plan is to issue a new competitive procurement, just to make sure that we're getting the most for the dollars that we're spending here at the tollway. Certainly we always look to, again, transparency, and the tollway, I think, has already accomplished much to repair, to some extent, the tarnished public image of the past and rebuild its relationship with our customers. I congratulate the directors on the strides that you've all taken in that regard, certainly. But of course, we can always do more. To that end, I've asked and invited Andrew Boron, our FOIA officer, and Victor Azar to come up. Victor's from our legal department, to give a brief presentation on the Freedom of Information Act's recent changes and, of course, our implementation efforts here. Tollway has a strong history of performance in this regard and responding to media and public information requests, but I've asked Andrew and Victor to inform us of the changes. So, without further ado,
thank you. You know, I always make fun of the people that come up here and cannot figure this out, whether it's left or right. But when you get up here, this thing turns into the controls of a nuclear reactor. And it's just, anyway, the Freedom of Information Act, welcome to, you know, a large part of my job. And again, there you go. I want to first point out that FOIA is a four-letter word that starts with F. So that's sort of FOIA for humor. But seriously, it is something that Chairman Wolf and Director LaFleur have already emphasized to me is something that's very important to the tollway and to them, and certainly to me personally, as far as transparency and complying with the rules and regulations related to FOIA. So the legislation or the law regarding FOIA requires that each agency appoint a FOIA officer. I am that unfortunate soul. Fortunately for me, I have a great working group that assists me in very complex and time-consuming matters. So I want to go through and quickly introduce people. Again, I'm Andrew Bourne, the FOIA officer. John O'Hara, who's not in this room, handles all the processing and all the administrative functions. Joelle McGinnis, who everyone here knows, handles all the media-related contacts and is a wealth of knowledge on, you know, regarding institutional matters. And then finally, Victor Azar, who is our representative from the legal department. I feel, given that this is certainly a legal function, and there's so much legal analysis that goes into responding to these matters, I feel blessed that I have Victor Azar. He's one of the best attorneys I know, and I really feel fortunate to have him in the group. The number of FOIA requests that we get, last year we had 295, and that was before the new legislation. In 2010, up to this point, we've already gotten 83. The categories of requests that we get are media, relate to media, business systems, engineering, procurement, finance, and then certainly your miscellaneous. A quick overview. Okay. All right, there you go. I'm going to turn it over to Victor real quick.
As Andrew said, my name is Victor Azar, and I'm an assistant attorney general, and I've been working on the FOIA group materials for the past 10 years, and the tollway has always been striving to maintain getting the records out to people in a timely manner, providing information to the media. The tollway has been dedicated to sharing the information about how it works, and has striven to constantly improve how we comply with the law and get the information out. The purpose of the Freedom of Information Act is to make the workings of the government available and accessible to the public, through providing the public documents and records of what goes on. And this includes paper records, contracts, electronic records, and even emails. The governor recently signed into legislation modifications to the Freedom of Information Act that significantly changed how the government and the agencies such as the tollway processes the request and deal with being transparent and accountable. Effective January 1st, the provisions have made some significant changes, which speed up the time in which the tollway has to respond to these requests, and also reduce the number of exemptions the tollway can seek, as well as simplifying the appeal process if there's a denial. Previously, the tollway had 7 days to respond to requests for information. That has been decreased to 5 working days. However, there's an exception that if it's a request is for commercial purposes, the tollway now has 21 days to respond. However, most requests fall under the 5-day request. The number of exemptions have been decreased, so the tollway has fewer ways not to release the information. Typically, however, the tollway has given out most information that is requested. Agencies are now required to provide the first 50 copies of letter-sized or legal-sized copies for free, and can charge 15 cents per page thereafter. Additionally, if there's any additional copies, such as blueprints or stuff like that, the tollway is only allowed to charge for the cost of reproducing the materials. It cannot charge for time searching for the documents, reviewing the documents, redacting the documents, or actually making the copies. And when the copies are a large volume, such as 400 or 500 thousands of pages, at that time is very significant. The biggest change, however, comes with the creation of the public access counselor at the Attorney General's office. Previously, if the agency denied a request, the requester had the option of appealing to the agency's head, which would be the executive director, and then if they didn't get an answer, they had to go to court. Now there's a simplified process in which the agency sends in a denial letter. The agency has to tell the requester why, in detail, the request was denied and advise them that they have a right to go to the public access counselor for an appeal. The public access counselor reviews the appeal, gives the agency an opportunity to respond in writing if it needs to, and gives the requester a chance to argue why the document should be released. They then issue a final opinion. The benefits to the agency if there's a final opinion is that the agency becomes immune for any liabilities that may arise from releasing the documents, and the agency is not subject to any penalties if they rely on that opinion. However, the Act allows a requester to appeal the decision straight to the appellate court, or excuse me, the circuit court, if they don't want to go through the appeals process to the Attorney General's office. In that case, if the requester prevails, they are entitled to reasonable attorney's fees. And if the agency denies the request for in bad faith, the agency is subject to a fine of up to between $2,500 and $5,000. When the tollway denies a request, it must specify specifically what exemption it is relying on, cite the statutory provision, and give a detailed explanation as to why it denied the request. However, the agency, the new requirements are that the agency deny a request when there's two circumstances. When there's an unreasonable invasion of personal privacy, the tollway must get pre-approval from the Attorney General's office, public access counselor. This requires then that we send a notice to the requester that it's being denied on a contingent basis, subject to the review of the Attorney General's office, public access counselor. And there's another exception that requires a tollway whenever it decides to deny a request because it's pre-decisional. And this would be in instances where there are preliminary drafts, notes, recommendations, or memorandum and other records in which opinions are expressed or policies or actions are formulated. This also requires pre-approval. In order to ensure the agency understands the requirements of the Act, the amendments require that the agency have a designated FOIA officer who must complete training within 6 months. Andrew has completed the training, and the agency is in compliance with that provision. If there's another Freedom of Information officer appointed or designated, that individual must get approval or get the training done within 30 days.
Okay, so real quick, to walk through sort of our internal processes, sort of things that have been changed over the past, you know, 6-8 months, to make the system more efficient. Requests for violations, which we used to get, you know, a significant amount of, we have now sort of taken that out of the FOIA process and sort of done as like in a process that you can just directly get it. You don't have to send in the letter, that type of thing. We offer more comprehensive content online. For example, as you have probably noticed, our board meeting agendas, our minutes are all online. We offer this meeting webcast live. All of our contract and bid information, and then we link to the Illinois Transparency and Accountability Portal, which is a state-run website that takes information from many agencies and provides, you know, access to the public. So that's if you haven't already looked at it, I highly recommend it. It's very interesting. And then one of the more important changes is we've now started to post every request that we get and our responses online. So a real quick overview of our actual website. If you go to the website and there's a button that says FOIA, you'll see this screen which explains more about the Freedom of Information Act. Then you press this button and you get additional information, and ultimately you get to see all the FOIAs. There's a sample request. So I think it's pretty comprehensive. For anybody that's interested in sending a FOIA, I think this should answer all their questions. So at this point, that's all the information we have for you. Any questions on your part?
Questions?
Thank you both very
thank
much.
You.
This is a big step forward, and we appreciate it. And we hope more information will get out more efficiently, less pain to all of us. Thank you.
Disclosure is always better than none.
So, the next item, as far as my update, I've asked Albert to give us a brief overview of Senate Bill 51, which implements some new or will cause some procurement reform. One caveat to this is that the legislation will become effective at this point. It's July 1 of this year, and the various entities, the Procurement Policy Board and others in state government, are still undergoing the process of figuring out how it's going to be implemented and exactly what it will mean. They haven't interpreted it fully or implemented it, certainly up to this point. But we thought that it was important, because it is a complex piece of legislation, that we begin the process now to educate the board and, of course, educate our own staff as well. So, Albert, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you. Good morning again. When I first did the slides for this, it was almost the size of a book. And then I had to present to the quarterly meeting, and then it became the size of a small pamphlet. Now it's just kind of an outline. But I think it's a good way to introduce you to what is going to be major changes in procurement. Let me give you a quick and dirty timeline. There was a legislative effort last year to fix the pay and pay-to-play. The Reform Commission was impaneled, and they indicated that two things had to be fixed in procurement, two things had to be fixed overall. And one of the major things that had to be fixed was the play and pay to play. And procurement is the play. Senate Bill 51 was introduced on May 20th, and it was passed by the General Assembly in record time on May 22nd. It went to the governor's office for review. The governor had a couple of changes, and those were considered, and only one change was passed. And Public Act 960795 was enacted in late November, early December, with, as Christy said, an effective date of July 1st, 2010. So when I was looking at the trailers for Armageddon, that was the date, July 1st, 2010. But since November or December of last year, we have been working with several agencies, including CMS. And CMS formed several committees. And when I found out about those committees, I made sure that the TOLE was represented. We wanted to get information. We also wanted to provide some recommendations about how to interpret the new legislation. We worked with CMS, CDB, the Capital Development Board, IDOT, and universities, just to name a few. So, as you can see, I'm cheating. I provide a lot of information on, you know, the introductory slide. Okay, Senate 51 key reforms. Let's talk about the key reforms. Reorganization. I had before, who was on first, who was on second, but I'm not going to get that cute. Before, the governor was responsible for appointing the chief procurement officers. The chief procurement officers were the heads of the major agencies like IDOT, like the Capital Development Board, and Senate Bill 51 changes that. The appointments of the chief procurement officers are going to be made now by the State Ethics Commission. Those hires are, I think, on pace to be completed by July 1st. And those chief procurement officers, in turn, will appoint the state procurement officers as POs.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that they're on track. I don't know that we know that yet.
Okay. Again, we're trying to provide you with, you know,
right,
relevant data,
facts.
But there's just the facts,
the
facts. But okay, you are correct about that. That's maybe wishful thinking on my part. The theme here for reorganization was independence, professionalism, and more oversight. Independent because now the agencies, or rather the people that are administering the procurements, are going to be decoupled from the agency. Professional because now procurement professionals are going to have to maintain CPPO and CPPB certified public purchasing officer or buyer certifications. I checked, and unfortunately, a law degree is not an equivalent. And there's going to be more procurement personnel. In addition to the state purchasing officer who's going to be embedded within the agency, there is going to be a procurement compliance monitor, likewise embedded with the agency. And that procurement compliance monitor can at any point during the procurement process stop the process if we believe that something is not going correctly. Public hearings. More public hearings are going to be required. Maybe it'd be a good time to kind of introduce two themes. Independence and transparency are very, very important in these reforms. Public hearings is a means to kind of involve the public so that at least they become aware of some activity that in the past has been controversial. The public hearings will be required for sole sources, sole economically feasible sole sources, emergencies that last longer than 90 days, and for waiving conflicts. So the public will be aware, the public will have an opportunity to provide public comment at scheduled public hearings. After the fact procurement, we've been fortunate that this doesn't happen as much as I've seen it happen in other agencies, but sometimes in the procurement process and the rush to get the goods or services that we need, sometimes we can inadvertently encourage a contractor to begin work before a contract has been signed. As I said, we've been fortunate. We don't have that many instances, but I did tell staff at the quarterly meeting, you really have to look out for this now, because in the past, in those rare occasions when we did have to notify the comptroller that services were started a little bit before the contract, typically maybe just a few days, the presumption will be going forward that that work can't be paid for, that if there was no contract, it shouldn't be paid. And there is a process for a waiver, but that waiver process is going to have to include approval from the comptroller and from the state treasurer. So this is going to be much harder. Subcontractors, collecting data and reporting. This is going to hit us pretty hard, actually, on the engineering side. We are going to have potentially fewer contracts going out, but for those contracts that do go out, we're going to have to require subcontractors to provide all of the disclosures that were previously only required of the prime contractors, and it will probably not be limited to first tier contractors. So it's going to go down to second and third and fourth tier subcontractors. In addition, the subcontractors are going to have to provide a copy of their subcontractor agreements. Again, it might be helpful to remember the themes of transparency and independence. Transparency being the main focus of this requirement. The thought was that there was a lot of scrutiny on who was entering into contract with the state directly, but there was still an opportunity for companies to obtain a benefit being on a second or third tier relationship with someone doing business with the state. Reporting vendor communications is very, very important. This one's highlighted, and prohibited bidders is likewise highlighted, because I'm going to go into these a little bit more in depth. This is, again, transparency. Okay, reporting communications with vendors. I'll tell you what I told the staff. Don't panic. I've had a lot of situations where staff have come to me, hey, I got a call from someone. Can I even pick up the phone? And the answer is still, yes, you can. And, hey, listen, I met someone at a conference. Can I talk to them? Yes, you can. We'll talk a little bit more about what you might have to report. This does not prohibit communications. What this does, it requires you to report those communications if it fits into certain criteria. So, what has to be reported? Any written or oral communication received by a state employee that imparts or requests material information or makes a material argument regarding potential action concerning a procurement matter, including but not limited to an application, a contract, or a project, and it shall be reported to the Procurement Policy Board. I apologize for just reading those points to you, but that is the fullest extent of the guidance that we have right now. We have to read from the statute to kind of inform people about what might or might not have to be reported. As I said, I've had some instances where actually someone asked me, look, I went to a vendor conference and there were 100 vendors. Do I have to collect all their business cards? No. No, you don't. That would be, even if I wanted to say yes, and that person I did want to say yes to, but even if I wanted to say yes, couldn't do that. That's just not practical. But where you're in situations where someone is talking to you about something that is a pending procurement, and pending procurement is still not defined, but as best as we can see right now, something that is upcoming in nature, and someone is trying to convince you of something or trying to inform or shape the way that we might go out with a solicitation, you should report that. Okay, what does it report? Now that you've decided that, yes, I have to report this, what does it have to include? Here are the fields that have to be filled out. I'll go through them quickly. Date and time, identity of the person, job title, identity of the responder, detailed summary of the point.